definitely Wacker Drive. My estimations are correct. We should be very close.
Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
That's the great Bill Curtis. You know, he's on the cover of Chicago Magazine. We ought to get him in to talk about that. And then Walter Jacobson's wandering around the halls here. We could drag Walter in. We could do a reunion.
We could do that. Yeah, they were at the...
It's like putting the Beatles back together.
They were at the SNL broadcast thing for some reason.
I was there, actually.
You were there, Dave?
Yes.
Boy, they invited everyone important.
Yeah, we didn't get a call.
No.
I think Walter and Bill are going to do another radio show. Because they did the first one, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, didn't they do the first one, Walter and Bill? A couple of weeks ago?
They did.
Yeah, and I think it went well enough they're going to do another one. Yeah, you put old partners like that together, it could be fists. Could be a fight. But those guys still seem to really like each other. So, call Bill. Call Curtis, see if we can get him in.
I will do that.
Okay. National Geographic Explorer Dr. Kara Cooney is here. She's already delightful, and she's only been here 3 minutes. I certainly hope she doesn't screw it up now for the rest of the interview.
Well, I was late, so.
Yeah, but late, you know, it's kind of a loose term. Technically, you were late from the designated time. Turned out you were 3 minutes early.
You weren't in the lift with the guy who went the wrong way on this Wacker Street you speak of, upper, lower.
Right. It was, yeah, it's very confusing.
It was very dramatic.
Yes.
But I'm here, so we're good.
Well, you know, you're in L.A. It's so easy to get around L.A. anytime
of day. Oh, it's easy. It's a piece of cake every day as I face the 405. It's no problem at all.
Now, you are the only celebrated Egyptologist in the studio right now. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I am, yes. And I feel the weight.
There is that. As you tour this exhibit show, what do I call it? Event?
What I'm doing here in Chicago, it's an event, and I hope it's not an exhibit because it's just me on stage, and that would be awkward. So I'll be speaking.
Well, you could be an exhibit.
Yeah, then it would be awkward.
Yeah, you could be an exhibit. And the event is you speaking about your latest book and other things?
Mm-hmm. The book is called When Women Ruled the World, and it's coming out next month, this month, October. End of October, okay. Beginning of November, just in line with election season.
And you're going to finally solve the age-old question, Cleopatra or Nefertiti?
No, I'm going bigger. I'm going bigger. I'm going home. I am trying to solve the question, why are people hostile to females in power?
Well, that couldn't be more timely, could it?
It couldn't. So
right. I wish we had a bell in here.
Ding, ding, ding. Well, that's interesting. So you put this whole this presentation together for this tour, or is this something you've been talking about for a while?
I've been talking about this for a while because at UCLA, University of California in Los Angeles, uh-huh. I've been teaching a class called Women in Power in the Ancient World for about 5 years. Mm-hmm. Just turned it into an online class. And I discuss why in Egypt women were regularly and systematically allowed into positions of power that were very real at the highest level of state, not as queen, but as female king.
Right.
And what that means, why Egypt is different from other places, why other places can't wrap their heads around that females would be good rulers, why we can't wrap our heads around right. that females
the most advanced nation in the world.
Oh, so advanced.
And we are the last nation in the world of that advanced status that hasn't had a female ruler that I'm aware of.
When there is organic choice, let me make a comparison. So if I'm going to compare it to a parliamentary system, because mm-hmm. there...
Which,
Britain,
you know, we might as well go to.
We might as well do that, right? Because in Britain, you've had two female leaders, Theresa May now and Maggie Thatcher as was. And that happened, I think, because you don't have a direct vote. When people organically have the choice, do I want a female leader, do I not, they seem to run screaming in the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am now looking through the lens of deep history, trying to figure out why that is.
Why, when you think of being an Egyptologist and
a celebrated Egyptologist.
Celebrated, which is a weird thing.
Why is Egypt different? What about at that time made it something where you only see that kind of history there and not elsewhere in the world?
I'm going to set this up tonight, and I start with a map. I start with geography, and I say how Egypt is protected on all four sides, that it's hard to invade when you have desert on two sides, the Mediterranean Sea to the north, and the Nile River filled with granite boulders to the south. And that means that you have a very protected space that, unlike Iraq or Mesopotamia, modern ancient Mesopotamia, or Syria, where you don't have these natural boundaries, right. and there's warlording constantly, Egypt is very protected, which means that it could develop the most perfect divine kingship ever seen on the planet. And this is the tragedy of the whole story. It's in the most authoritarian, the most unequal of political systems that women are most needed to protect the men at the center
of
the
wheel.
How about
that?
Yeah, it makes sense because of warlords and invasions, and we've seen that obviously in history with Rome and Caesar and all the sort of in, the palace and the
Game of
the
Thrones
empires that have been built. But that's an interesting way to think about it.
When things are more decentralized, like in ancient Greece or ancient Rome, when one man falls, another man can take his place. But when you have a divine king who is believed to be God incarnate, who must be protected, then you will ask that boy's mother, sister, daughters to flock around him and protect him.
Let me take the academics out of this for a second, because in a few minutes we talked before we went on the air, you're cool. You're cool. I'm telling you, cool.
Thank you.
How do you take these snooty academics out of this and relate this to a regular audience?
It's one of my favorite things to do, but it's me walking on the edge of a knife within my own ivory tower. Mm-hmm. I'm going up for a promotion to full professor right now. I've written 3 books.
You want to write a letter for you?
But,
I got
no,
you.
No, but I have colleagues who are very close to me and who are protective of me saying, oh, it's not going to be enough. And I say, but I have 3 books.
Three books, exactly.
And they say, but 2 of them are trade books for a popular audience. And I say, yes, and this is a bad thing. Why? And it's an interesting place to find myself that I'm doing well in my career, and yet sometimes within the ivory tower, I'm not doing so well. Or am I? Ask me again in a couple months, and I'll let you know how.
I used to spend quite a bit of time in Los Angeles, and UCLA always seemed to. And I grew up around Cornell University,
yeah.
And UCLA always seemed laid back and a little more real than some of the Ivy League schools I was familiar with.
It's no Yale, it's no Harvard, and that's a beautiful thing.
It's not a bad thing.
No.
How'd you get interested in this?
I don't know, and this is
no. We're going to need an answer.
Egyptology. Okay, I'll give you my answer. In that, it is as puzzling and confusing to me as it is to my parents, my family, that I would follow my heart and go down a rabbit hole of thousands of years past to try to crack a system that I can't even visit or see. The second answer to your question is that I'm an upper middle class white chick. Mm-hmm. And so I was allowed to do it. I have the privilege of being able to.
I had the opportunity.
Yep. And if I had grown up in a different way and I had a hard scrabble existence, ain't no way I would be sitting here as a celebrated Egyptologist.
When you were putting this book together, I assume it took a few years at least.
I did this one on the fly. Usually it takes a few years. My first one, The Woman Who Would Be King, took a good 3 years to write. I had a small child. It was more of a slog. This one, I vomited out. I'm so sorry to say that on the radio.
No, it's fine. We're familiar with the word.
About 200,000 words over a 2-month period of the summer when I wasn't teaching in between
classes. 2 months?
It was crazy land. I went to this cafe and I just poured out everything that I could. And then they sent it to the editors and they went, we need some help here. And then they made me hire an editor to help me.
Really?
And then over the next 4 months, I whipped it into shape. So I wrote this sucker in, I don't know, 7 months altogether.
So were you motivated by our current times?
Oh, yes.
You need to get this out there.
Yes.
Right now.
But the Me Too moment keeps getting bigger. And with the Kavanaugh situation, should we call it a situation? It keeps growing. New things keep happening. And we seem to be in a zeitgeist moment in the United States where people believe the women. Or they blame the women, where the women should have been dressed a different way and acting a different way.
Sure, it's one of the
and not
two.
Drunk like the men. Or we say that women have the opportunity as a 15, 16, 17-year-old to go and party like the guys, too, and still have their bodies protected. And these are the main issues. Everything revolves around power. It can be sexual power, political power, economic power. But for me, all of these are conversations about power. And this is a different history book. So I snuck in little elements of politics around me, things that I was seeing as the United States and I dare say most of the world seems to be going in a nationalistic authoritarian direction. How are women playing a role? Or how is the hostility towards women in power playing a role? All of these things are very, very interesting to me right now.
AuditoriumTheater.org for tickets for tonight. Sold out? We got a few seats left? Okay. AuditoriumTheater.org. Can you hang around a second? We have more questions.
Yeah, sure.
All right. We'd like to also be celebrated Egyptologists before you're done.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
We're talking with my favorite celebrated Egyptologist of all the celebrated Egyptologists. Dr. Kara Cooney is here and going to be at the Auditorium Theater when?
Oh, my goodness. 7 p.m. ish?
Yeah.
Seven? Let's make it 7-ish.
I seem to be messing all the times up
7-ish.
Today, so let's just go with 7-ish.
And we talked a little bit before about what people will see on stage. I'm curious about your take on modern-day Egypt and how we've gotten it so backwards because it seems like time's going in reverse.
Well, modern Egypt is just like ancient Rome. Ancient Rome, when it was ruled by family power, women had a say and they could step up. As soon as the Praetorian Guard started killing all those emperors and the military took over, mm-hmm. women had no place. Egypt is the same. It moved from family power to military authority. And we've just gone through a coup. Morsi was ousted and Sisi was put in.
Right.
With that kind of military authority, a woman really has a hard time finding any political power whatsoever.
So how about regular life? What's it like for an average woman in Egypt?
Regular life in Egypt is easier for a woman in that part of the Middle East compared to Saudi Arabia, the Emirati areas, Yemen, arguably. Mm-hmm. There is in Egypt something called female genital mutilation, which is practiced in very high numbers in Egypt and is very little discussed. It's more of an African cultural element than it is a larger Middle Eastern
one. It's a nightmare.
And that is very troublesome. It's a very Egyptian thing, and it needs to stop.
Comparatively speaking, from when there was more family power to military power and the shift in women having political power there, what's the effect? Do you see that one when the women were able to be in power, family power, it was a stronger society versus the shift to military?
It's so hard to compare because the cultural systems, the language are so far removed from one another within Egypt. If we wanted to compare it in ancient Rome, you could say that there was more stability within Rome when family power was in action. This is a question I don't think that we have an answer to. Do women rule differently? Do they make different decisions? I don't think we have enough women who are ruling with an agenda that is their own, who aren't the Sarah Sanders mm-hmm. of the world. I keep trying to figure out a word for Uncle Tom. The African American who works against his own people.
Right.
This would be the woman who works against her own sisterhood. And right now, Sarah Sanders is what pops up in my head. That woman who lets the evangelical right power base tell her how to live her life and what is truth and what is not. But we don't even have a word for that woman who turns against the sisterhood because we don't have the sisterhood because we don't have a female-driven agenda. I don't think we even know what it looks like. Most females work for the patriarchy without even thinking about it.
Dr. Cooney, when you look at some of the female leaders of Egypt of the time, and a lot of what we know about them come from almost a pop cultural history, mm-hmm. how they were depicted in films and how we kind of know Egypt history. I think of even lately, I just saw on HBO The Mummy with Tom Cruise, this idea that everything is, there's so much that is depicted by mainstream culture. Can we, obviously tonight we're going to learn more about how these women ruled. And there is a sharp contrast to what we think we know about a Nefertiti or what we know about a Cleopatra.
Cleopatra in particular, I mean, you call it a pop cultural history, and you're exactly right. And that's what the ancient Romans wanted. So when Octavian took over and then names himself Caesar Augustus, he starts a propaganda campaign from the very beginning, spinning her into this greedy, self-interested horror of a woman who ruined two good Roman men. And he did so very effectively, which meant that when I was writing that chapter of the book, I had to throw out all Roman sources connected with her decision making, her thought processes, and try to strip it down to what I knew about the other ancient Egyptian women, which really isn't a lot and limits itself to statues and temples right. and buildings and sacred texts. It becomes very hard to get into the minds of these people. But make no mistake, Egypt is hard because any authoritarian regime doesn't let you see into its soft underbelly. It's always protected by high walls. And I have to pull veil upon veil away to try to find the humanity of these women.
You have a class load now? What are you teaching now?
I'm teaching ancient Egyptian civilization, pre-dynastic to Middle Kingdom.
Yeah.
And I'm teaching a grad seminar on art history. And out of the goodness of my heart, I'm adding on an independent study of Introduction to Middle Egyptian Hieroglyphs.
I bet you're a fabulous professor. I'd love to be in your class.
You're awesome. That's nice. I overteach.
Are you fun?
I try to be. Sometimes I can be very serious. You can tell, right?
Right.
There is profundity to my, I don't know.
I mean, are the young ladies inspired to make a difference now? Because I see so many kids who are just fired up by the mess that we're in. They'll register to vote, But then something comes up and they don't finish the deal. We've got to inspire kids to just make sure they get out and vote and why it's so important.
In a sense, I'm speaking to the choir. I'm speaking to the kids who got into UCLA in freshman year. And so these kids are pretty socially engaged. It's the kids who are working part-time at Cal State and have two jobs on the side and they're Uber drivers. I mean, those are the kids who are, when the hell are going to find the time to vote?
Right.
Women or men.
Right.
And those are the ones that I have a hard time reaching, and privilege is everything in this world, particularly when it comes to political engagement.
Tonight, Auditorium Theater, Dr. Kara Cooney, and then I'll be touring with her and opening for her. I don't really know anything about it, but at least I can lighten the crowd up. And I hope people have fun. I hope people get out. I'd like to see you sell this sucker out tonight.
That'd be great. It'd be great.
When Women Ruled the World, a series of speakers that are pretty darn interesting. Oh, auditoriumtheater.org for that whole schedule, by the way. And you at karacooney.squarespace.com.
Yeah, sorry about that, Squarespace.
That's okay.
I got cheap.
If I write a paper and send it to... If any of the listeners or any of us write papers and send them to you, you'll grade them and get them back to us.
I guess so.
Yeah. Nice to see you. Please come back.
Thank you.
All right. And have fun tonight.
Thanks so much.